another episode of the Comic Book Legion podcast, where we're here to talk DC Comics, and that's it, because that's all we like. No, I'm kidding. I am Mark, and with me, my co-host, Clay. What's good?
Hey, what's up, guys?
How you doing, man?
I'm doing good. You know, I had a little bit of a late night. If nobody if anybody plays PlayStation or just video games in general, me and Juice have been playing Apex, like, basically every night since it's come out, and a new event came out, so we were kind of up a little late, but I'm doing good.
It's that good?
Yeah.
Well, like, yeah, what fun. Kind of, like, fighting style is it?
So, it's a first-person shooter.
Okay.
So, it's a first-person shooter, but it has the graphics of, like, well, have you ever played Titanfall? Or have you heard of Titanfall?
Titanfall, that's like those mech warrior looking things?
Yeah. So, it's the same creator, and it's in the same universe. So, it has those graphics, but it is in the playstyle of Fortnite because it's a battle royale.
Gotcha.
So, and it has characters like Overwatch. So, it's like all these things mixed into one, and it's really, really cool.
Nice. Yeah, I've just been... Since I think our last episode, I've had 4 fantasy football drafts, so that's been my entire week.
Well, I will say, me and Juice are actually on Thursday going to see my second Nightmare in theaters. So I had to see my first Nightmare here at the house in order to see the Birds of Prey teaser trailer. And if nobody knows what that is, my first Nightmare is It. The clown movie. I'm terrified of clowns. I am absolutely.
I do not like clowns.
Like even thinking about it now is getting my blood pressure up. But I watched that by myself in this exact same room on this computer, and my anxiety and fear were through the roof, and so I did have a little bit of trouble sleeping. So
yeah, that's actually. Yeah. See, like I'm not. I am not a fan of horror movies. Well, I like horror movies. I don't like supernatural, like, if you're going into, like, demonic stuff. I don't like that kind of stuff. Like, that stuff is creepy. If it's just, you know, random horror, I'm like, whatever. If, like, you know, if someone's trying to kill or, those things, like, that doesn't bother me. But if I have to watch, like, an Insidious or Annabelle or all that crap that James Wan does, like, I can't handle it.
Yeah, no, I'm not a scary movie guy, like, at all, and Juice knows this, and he's like, dude, you can't see the second one without seeing the first one. I was like, what are you talking about? I just need to see the teaser trailer. You buy the ticket, I'll see the teaser trailer, and then I'm gonna walk out. And he's like, man, you can't do that to me. You can't, you gotta watch the whole thing. And so I was like, crap. So I rented the movie, not last night, but the night before. And I sat down, I watched it, I didn't have a pillow over my face, but, like, I was wincing a whole lot, and I was just like, oh, crap.
You are shooketh?
There's one part in the movie where Pennywise comes out of a wall in, like, a 3D form, but is, like, 20 feet tall and, like, super scary. Oh, my God, I almost screamed. It genuinely scared the crap out of me several times in that movie.
I do want to see it, though. Is that my wife doesn't like horror movies. So, like, she doesn't like going to movie theaters in general. So, for me to be able to say, hey, babe, let's pay $15 to go see a movie that she's not going to want to see. Like, and I think it's also kind of like my fault because I have taken her to a movie theater before to see, like, Saw back in the day when we were dating. And I told her there's nothing wrong. It's just like a psychological thriller. So she's like, okay. And then I think that's like the Saw movie where the person was getting crucified. And every time something was wrong, like it was like their wrist and their ankles were like clicking.
Yeah.
And like I'm surprised she married me after watching that
movie. I will say this. Well, I will ask this. You said $15. Is that $15 for both of you guys?
No, that's like per ticket.
Okay. I was going to say, I was like, holy crap.
No. Well, I mean, I do try my best to go, like, matinee, because I try to avoid as many people as possible.
See, and that's my way of going. Go as early as possible. You don't have to deal with as much people.
Yeah, I'm not like those videos that go viral when, you know, Tony Stark's like, "I am Iron Man," and he snaps his finger and people are going nuts and throwing their popcorn. Like, I would hate that. Like, I want to watch the movie. I'm not. Yeah. So, but I'm an old curmudgeon. Well, tomorrow I'm turning 34, so I'm a curmudgeon 34-year-old. When people hear
tomorrow's your birthday,
tomorrow's my birthday.
Oh my God, Mark! And you didn't tell me.
Well, I told you right now. See, so you have a whole day.
Oh, I have a whole day. Okay.
So I want you to. You have to record a video and put it on Twitter, singing "Happy Birthday," while watching it too.
I don't know if I could do that.
Well, that's what you're gonna have to do. Sorry, it's my birthday. It's my request. anyways, so you might not know that by the first 5 minutes of this episode, but yes, we do talk comic books, and we are going to be reviewing a DC Comics. But before that, you know what? Let's do something different than what we normally do, which is let's plug ourselves in the beginning. Which is You can find me at Mark Reads Comics. I was going to say Mark Foss's at Mark Reads Comics on Twitter. Not only am I a co-host here, but I'm also a co-host for the Fantasy Football Legion podcast, where I do with Jake and Clay. Where can they find you, buddy?
You can find me at Fanboy Clay on Twitter and on Instagram. I am doing some spray painting, and if you want to go see that, go check it out there. And I
didn't even know people still use Periscope.
People still use Periscope?
Wait, isn't that where you were doing it? Didn't you post a video? Because people were able to click hearts.
I was doing Twitter Live.
Oh, so is Twitter Live like Periscope? Because it seems kind of like the same exact format.
Yeah, a lot of the live features on every app basically took from Periscope and was like, hey, let's put that on our app.
And it was basically the same thing. So I was like, man, Clay, I'm like, who the hell still uses Periscope? But, you know, I was just supporting, so I was watching you just friggin' rattling spray paint and doing Dragon Ball Z of, I don't know, Goku, whatever. Who was it of?
It was All Might. It was All Might from My Hero Academia.
No, I'm talking about, you did like a black and orange, like a half and half.
Yeah, I did. It was, wait. Hold on.
Step it up, man. Posted the picture on our page. On our chat.
Yeah, and
wasn't one of them like Vegeta or something?
It might have been Vegeta.
See, you don't even know your own work.
Hold on.
How is it possible you don't know your own work?
It's been a while. Okay, so I'm looking at it now. The red and white one? No, that's too old. No. So the black, yellow, pink, and red was of All Might, and then the one most recently was All Might as well. But I also did one with like Mega Man and Pac Man.
No, I wasn't talking about that one.
Okay.
All right. Well, it's probably All Might. I don't know. They all look the same. Anyways, let's talk comic books. And the first book that we're going to be talking about today is Lois Lane number 3 by none other than Greg Rucka, Mike Perkins, and Paul Mounts on art duties. This was I actually liked the book. I was enjoying my time reading it. And we mainly because of I was really curious to see how Lois was going to be affected by what happened at the end of last issue, where she was going to go ahead and meet with Mr. Agger, and there was like a hit, and we still didn't know, was it going to be Lois or was it actually Agger that was the target? But honestly, that whole story kind of quickly turned once we saw Superman on the scene, and he was kind of all there, and I didn't know exactly how I was going to feel, but I felt pretty confident that I already knew what the story was going to be about, and it was going to be more about Clark and Lois and where they stand.
Yeah. And I think that's the only nitpick that I have about this issue in particular. Don't get me wrong. This book is still very enjoyable. You know, every single time I look at this book, I can only think of it being partially planned by Bendis, and so I'm just like, ugh. But this book is actually very entertaining. I love the variant cover on this book this week.
Oh, yeah, the Jenny Frisson. It was amazing.
Looks absolutely amazing. But this, the main story of this entire book gets sidelined for this issue. And I enjoyed it, but I just, it is a pet peeve when books do that altogether for me. It's not just on this book. It's happened in several other books. Most recently, Action. The other one was, I believe, was it Batman? I think Batman is actually doing it next week. It kind of just irks me when they do that, because we want to know what's going on.
So you're not necessarily a fan of, like, when you're watching a TV show and then they create, like, that, you know, things are building steam, and then they have that episode right in the middle that feels a little bit filler, but it could be for, you know, mainly character development, but yeah. You're just not a fan of them killing the momentum.
Exactly. Okay. Like, some understandable. A lot of those episodes in TV, or a lot of those books in comics, I feel like could either wait until after the arc is over, or do it right before so we can get it over with, we learn a little bit more about the character, and so that way we actually have something to latch onto when we go into
that story. But did this feel forced to you?
This didn't feel forced, because Rucka did a very good job as organically putting it into the story.
Okay.
There was a lot of family drama in this.
We'll get to that, because I was really curious on what your thoughts are going to be on that one.
My thoughts on this was, Rucka was like, hey, a lot of people are in this huge debate of Man of Steel versus, like, Henry Cavill versus Christopher Reeves. Let's write a Christopher Reeves book. And that's basically what this is.
Yeah, it kind of felt very, because you're getting a little bit more of those elements, especially when they were flying, and kind of like the poses and stuff like that. Like, I could see that. I mean, I kind of liked, from just how angry it was, even though there's just something so charming about Superman when he's as Superman, that even though she's pissed off, she still kind of melts. Because it's just about, like, you know, it's that presence. Like, I don't think it would work if it actually looked like Clark. But it was just that.
Yeah, and she said, she's like, I know what you're doing. And he's like, well, what am I doing? And she's like, well, you're going to take me flying so that way I'm not angry.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's that I actually enjoyed, because that's very a Clark thing to do. He's trying to be charming and everything else. And that's also very Lois. You know, she's not, you know, going to immediately melt, because that's who Lois is. And this whole thing, I really feel like Rucka has done his research, has really sunk into the character of Lois. And I think he got her right on this whole thing. Especially like when her and Renee are walking and she looks like she's talking to herself, but she's actually like talking to Superman.
Oh, I love that one. The whole, when she was like, oh, not cool.
Yeah. And she's like, I'm not talking to you, Renee. I'm talking to him. And Renee's like, what? What's going on?
Yeah.
And then he just like pops up out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm. I thought that was really strong. And honestly, in between all those kind of conversations, Clark kept on mentioning, when is it that you're going to actually talk to me about what's really going on? And she said, well, when I have something, I'll tell you. I have to be honest. We'll get to the part where, because I thought it was kind of cool seeing the two questions going hand to hand.
Yes, that's exactly what I was going
to Yeah, and seeing up, all that amazing like hand to hand combat, which was really cool. Well, I guess we'll just get to it now. I loved seeing Clark and Lois together, and I loved seeing, because it felt very old school vibey, like the vibe. But seeing here question versus question, and I love like their hand to hand. It felt very like Liam Neeson, You know, like, if they were just... Well, is it Krav Maga? That's very, like, hand-to-hand?
Yes.
So, I absolutely... This was, like, some of the coolest art, and I love the close-ups of what they were actually doing with their hands, like, the actual movements. But I don't know, man. It's... Rucka has kind of turned me into a really big Rene fan, and I've never really been a big Rene Montoya fan. But for some reason, just the little bit that I've seen her in this series, I'm actually really, like, I'm starting to like her a little bit more.
I personally have not been really a Rene... Like, I don't know much about Rene, so I wasn't really a fan of hers to begin with because I didn't know much about her. I always knew about Charlie.
Mm-hmm.
And you see him here. And that was awesome. I absolutely loved, you know, the kind of witty... Hey, I'll show you mine if you show me yours first. Mm-hmm. And they started to, you know, take off the mask and everything else. And it's a little cliche, but like when she was like, I thought you were dead. He's like, yeah. Too many questions.
No, yeah.
It's like, oh, God.
No, I thought that was really good. And actually went back then after that really nice moment back to Lois and Clark. And it was kind of like Lois... you know, Clark is just trying to justify what he's doing. He's like, look, someone tried to kill you. She's like, well, you don't know that. And he's like, but even so. But he's like, you know, I was just wanting to be there for you. And then Lois is like, yeah, but what you fail to understand is that maybe I was trying to protect you. And then that's when the whole narrative of exactly how this whole book started, which was from that kiss that was ended up getting captured. And he's like, oh, man, I really screwed up. So it was kind of nice. Like, I liked those back and forth. But I got to tell you that when they – at the end of the – well, you know what? I'll get to the end of the book part because I feel like you want to say something to that.
Well, the whole point where Clark is saying, oh, I screwed up, the next panel – like, I don't know much about the creators in DC, whether they're married or not. I feel like Rucka, he might be married. Because the very next panel is something a spouse would definitely say to somebody
with, who did screw especially up. With a big smile on their face.
Yeah. So she just like hugs his face and said, yes, you did. And that, I was like, yep, I love this book. Just because we need to remember, because we haven't seen it a whole lot, unfortunately, because of Bendis.
Well, that's actually why I really like this issue. We haven't really had them have a book of just talking to each other. It's everything is very, oh, Lois, yeah, oh, you came back a little early, so what did she say? Oh, I gotta go, there's an emergency. And it's kind of like they're just forcing that one scene just so that you could feel like, oh, okay, yeah, they're still together.
Yeah. And so with this, I love this book because we're seeing both Lois and Clark and we're seeing Lois and Superman. But we're seeing them as a couple. We're seeing them as husband and wife. That's why I love this book.
Now,
and like we said...
Now, just because I need to ask you a question that leads to the end of this book. When Question... Because you know how Renee mentioned that she was going to meet Lois back at the hotel? Okay? Now, Clark mentioned, I'll see you like later on tonight. After he has to do what he has to do. At the end of this book, Lois is getting into... She enters her hotel, and she sees the shower running. Okay? Did you at any moment, because of the conversation where Clark kept on asking Lois, what is it that you're not telling me? On top of... I don't know if it was in Superman or Action Comics. I think it was in Action Comics. When he finally met Lois again, and Lois kind of mentioned that she feels like they should kind of, like, loosen up their relationship.
You thought that it was somebody else?
I thought it was Renee.
Whoa.
Dude, I was like, oh my God, is this Lois's secret? Like, is this what she's not telling? And it was going to be, I'm like, oh, it all makes sense why Bendis was trying to, like, make their marriage a little bit more free. And then on top of, because she even said, like, oh, I need this. You know, like, I need this in terms of, like, their marriage, not to be so, like, bound. And then
Yeah.
Something, I don't know, man. I was like, oh my God, this is going to wreck me. But then I felt a little bit better when I saw her dialogue, when she said, oh, well, you know, you said you'd take care of it quickly. I didn't think you were going to be, like, this fast. And then,
yeah,
it just so happens that, you know, it's...
I will say, with as serious as this book was, as heartfelt as this book was, this ending joke was hilarious. Like, for me, you know me, we've talked about it here on the podcast. As far as comedy in comics, it has to be very well for me to actually enjoy it. I, like, if I want to read comedy, you know, in comics, I read the funny papers. Like, I don't read comics for funny. But this was hilarious. You know, when you read that dialogue, you're like, oh, Clark is already in the shower, you know? You know, Rucka just wants to show a little bit of love in the relationship. And then when she opens the freaking shower door, it's Jonathan Kent in the shower. And he's, like, covering himself with a towel, and she's, like, covering her eyes. It is hilarious.
No, I thought so, too. So that's why I was really worried, because I thought that you were going to hate this.
It, because I wasn't expecting it, I feel like that, like, because nothing was really going through my mind of reading the last few pages. I was like, okay, it's winding down. There's going to be a really big cliffhanger, you know, and that's what's going to lead us into the fourth book. And then seeing John, I was like, what, what the hell is this?
Okay, I hear you. But, man, no, I did not, I didn't think that at all. I was like, oh my God, this is her secret. I feel like I was watching All My Children. And I'm like, oh my, I was like, oh my gosh, Lois, what are you doing? No, this is her secret. Bendis, you mother. And then I got it. So I got a chuckle but it was more like I got a chuckle because it was a sigh of relief that what I was actually thinking was not actually the case. Because that would have, then I think I would have jumped on your hate Bendis train if that was indeed the case. I think I would have been pretty upset. Anyways, jumping into a book that I don't think that I ever would have thought that I would have wanted to see in terms of DC milking the deceased train by now adding spinoffs. But dude, Deceased, A Good Day to Die.
I really enjoyed this book.
So good.
And I did get a... like and a retweet for my comment to Tom Taylor with what he did in this book. And it's funny and it's not funny at the same time. And we'll get there when we get there. But this Good Day to Die, it follows Big Barda, Mr. Miracle, Mr. Fantastic, Blue Beetle, Booster Gold, and Constantine. So we have... With a little surprise at the end. But I will say, this band of misfits, I did not think would ever be in a team-up before.
And it worked amazingly.
And it did. It worked amazingly. And of course, with Tom Taylor at the helm of this whole thing, there was a good amount of comedy. There was a good amount of action. And there was, of course, feels in this entire book.
Yes.
And so we start off with Barda and Mr. Miracle. We see them, you know, go to where Apocalypse used to be. They see that it was destroyed. They realize, oh, well, you know, Darkseid is dead. You know, Mr. Miracle says, oh, and it feels good. Let's go back home. They go under Earth. And we see Mr. Terrific, you know, examining Captain Boomerang. And I thought this was hilarious because I don't think a lot of people caught it. But you see Mr. Miracle, like, talking to himself and recording. And Captain Boomerang is, like trying to, like, get out or whatever in the first two panels. Mm-hmm. But when he's actually recording, he's like, Boomerang is standing completely still, and it like sounds like it looks like he's actually listening to Mr. Terrific.
Oh, I never. But he I didn't. Oh, I can kind of see that. Okay.
Yeah, he looks normal, just like with like blood on him.
Yeah.
So I thought that was a little funny. But it slowly gets to the point where everybody starts to team up.
Well, even before the team up, since that's now that what you're mentioning, when Mr. Terrific was actually talking about, one of the things that I love about what Tom Taylor does is that Tom Taylor is always able to find one clever thing to do with a character. And I love that he was able to use his mask, Mr. Terrific's mask, to actually be able to prevent him from actually getting the sickness from it being, like, airborne or, like, you know, being in such close proximity.
But I like it also that he didn't know. Mr. Terrific wasn't like, oh, I'm gonna, you know, be safe because of my mask. He told Barda and Mr. Miracle, oh, my mask prevents it. And they're like, did you know that? He's like, nope, I did not.
Yes, and so. I thought that, you know, him using, like, the tea mask, I was like, huh. He's like, you're one of the smartest people in the world, and you just got lucky. Like, I thought that was really funny when Scott said that. I was like, yeah. Like, I like those clever things. That's one of the first things I always do when I'm reading a Tom Taylor book, because I kind of already assume that the book is gonna hit you in the feels, but it's also going to be fun. But I always try to find what little clever thing is he going to add to, like, X character. And, you know, I found it there, and I thought it was great. I love seeing...
And, of course, I feel like this will always be something for always and forever now that Tom King has actually put it in there.
Tom Taylor.
You
said Tom King.
No. Ever since Tom King created this thing in Mr. Miracle...
Oh, gotcha.
I feel like it's going to happen in every Mr. Miracle or anything that has to do with Mr. Miracle. Mr. Miracle offers a veggie plate to... Mr. Terrific.
That was awesome. That was actually funny. So, that was a nice nod.
Juice actually thinks a veggie plate will be played with in the actual movie. So I think that would be funny if they actually did that.
I don't think it would be Darkseid though. But I can definitely see, you know, Scott Free and like Barda or something walking into like a chamber and you just see some of the new gods just eating on a vegetable plate.
Yeah.
Like that would be pretty great.
But we are introduced with Beetle and Booster because the rest of the team is already fighting. They're trying to figure out what's going on, what should we do? Because at this point, they don't know if anybody else is alive.
Yeah.
And even Blue Beetle was like, why don't we just, you know, get the... No, it was Booster was like, why don't we find the Justice League? And Mr. Terrific was like, do you really want to deal with one of these zombies that it has the strength of Wonder Woman? And he's like, oh, yeah, good point. So they figure out, hey, well, let's try to find somebody who has to deal with magic. And that's when they stumble upon Constantine. And this intro to Constantine
is amazing.
Is so awesome. Because you just, like, you see him in Liverpool, and you can barely see the text in the first bubble, and then you realize, oh, he's cussing because it's bleeped out, and then the other panel's bleeped out, and the other panel's bleeped out, and the other panel's bleeped out. So he finally gets in the taxi, and all these, you know,
all the deceased.
Yeah, all the deceased is, like, just all over the car, even his driver is deceased also.
Poor Chess.
I know. And we see Constantine, like, his eyes light up with fire, which was, like, just looked awesome. I love that panel. And he starts to drive the car, and then he realizes, oh, man, why didn't I ever learn how to drive? And the rest of the team finds him, talks to him, and he's like, hey, you know what? This is the end of times. There's nothing we can do about it. And they're like, well, there's possibly something you can do about it. He's like, nope, I don't think I will. I think
just getting to that, I was actually really thrown off because I was really enjoying the art in the book. And right after that moment when the whole team gather up and the art changes, I got thrown off a little bit because nothing annoys me more than when art changes. And if art is going to change, at least try to be as close as possible to it. But no, this was like a complete different. It went from like kind of like a nice rough to more like digitized, like a digital artist. And I was like, but I mean, the writing though and the characterizations were so good that I was able to just throw that away and continue on. Because when it's, you know, the first thing is like, hey, John, are you okay? He's like, oh, yeah, I'm doing great. I just set my best friend on fire, and I'm sitting on his ashes. And they're like, how's your day going? He's like, well, my entire planet was destroyed. He's like, hey, it's not a competition. So I was like, I automatically was like, okay, I'm loving this, and I've kind of forgot about it. And I love... I don't know why. It's like, I can't see Constantine now and not think of Carl Urban the way that he is as Billy Butcher in The Boys.
Oh, dude.
Even though, like, people like say, like, I guess his accent was atrocious. I mean, I'm not British, so I wouldn't know any better. And apparently it was, like, you know, it was bad. Based on who Billy Butcher, I guess, who he is. In terms of, you know, what part of, you know, England he lives. But I loved him. I loved him. I was like, all I see is John Constantine when I look at, you know, Carl Urban, the way that he was playing Billy Butcher. So that's really like how I was reading him.
I will be completely honest. I would love to see Urban as Constantine. But because I've consumed so much content within just the last year of Matt Ryan, his voice is literally just stuck in my head. So I always hear him when I see Constantine. But even so, like, both voices work perfectly well with Constantine. I will say, I got to see a cameo, and I'm sure freaking Kevin loved this, getting a Justice League International reunion going with Fire and... What is her name? Is it Fire and Ice?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Seeing them in this book, I was not expecting it whatsoever.
You are 100% right.
We haven't seen these characters since New 52. Like, for me personally. Mm-hmm. I have not seen them since New 52, Justice League International. So seeing them here was really, really cool. And this brings us to our first feels moment. with the two characters that you thought would be able to make it through this entire thing. Barda and Mr. Miracle are our first casualties in this book.
But they died, you know, like heroically by letting the others escape to get to where they need to. So it wasn't like, oh no, they died, and like it wouldn't make sense. Like these are the more powerful ones. How could they not? Well, the reasons, like they had reasons, and it was a heroic one.
Yeah, and. You know, Tom Taylor even makes a joke out of their death because, you know, Mr. Miracle, you know, his last words are, you know, quoting Cher. And Bart is like, do you really want those to be your last words? He's like, it's worth it. And
he's like, I like Cher.
Yeah, exactly. And we see Rip Hunter in here. Dude, there's so many Tom Taylor knows how to just throw random characters in a book and just make it work. Rip Hunter, of course, has a really big history with Booster Gold, so it made perfect sense for this to happen. Really, really awesome. We get a small glimpse of Constantine in the Oblivion Bar.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't really seen, for me personally, since I haven't been reading Justice League Dark, I haven't seen the Oblivion Bar since Metal, so that was a nice little cameo. And, you know, Constantine... You know, sees Rip Hunter. Rip Hunter tries to see his future, and he can't see anything. He's like, yeah, because I'm unpredictable. And he freaking headbutts him. He's like, yeah, you know, we're just going to, you know, go on our little merry way and change, you know, and save the world. And that's when zombified Barda and Mr. Miracle come in and, you know, start attacking. They get Mr. Terrific. And this is what my comment was about to Tom Taylor. I said... Tom Taylor, I can't say anything now, but you know what you did, and I can't be mad because it was really awesome. So, if people have been reading Injustice and Injustice 2, Tom Taylor killed Blue Beetle. I believe Blue Beetle. Ted Kord. In Injustice.
Okay.
And he made Booster Gold watch. And in this book, he made Blue Beetle watch Booster Gold die right before his eyes. So, just a flip-flop of the two. And I was just like, man, that sucks. It gets me in the feels. That's
a
nice
catch. Especially because you know their friendship. And this is kind of like now a Booster Gold that never existed.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's kind of like, how do you feel knowing that you have all these memories of your friend, but now he has just ceased from existing? So it's kind of like, no. Didn't happen.
Yeah. But Barda actually gets Blue Beetle, and then Constantine and Rip Hunter are like, hey, we need to fix this. And Rip Hunter's like, well, no, we can't do anything. And Constantine actually gets him, like, stuck somehow. I forgot how. He bounds them together. Yeah. So now, like, whatever movement Constantine makes, Rip Hunter will make. But a zombified Blue Beetle attacks Rip Hunter, kills him. And then comes the awesome cameo that you were talking about earlier. Dr. Fate and Zatanna come out of nowhere and are like, hey, this is not your time, this is not your fate, blah, blah, blah. And Constantine was like, well, I don't believe in destiny, this is stupid, I hate you guys, these people died for no reason and you could have saved them. And Fate was like, oh, well, this was their time. He's like, no, you know, like, these people are people. Look, that guy right there, his name was Mr. Fantastic. And, you know, he earned that name.
Mr. Terrific.
Or, yeah, sorry, not Fantastic. Gosh, yeah. Marvel. Okay. Mr. Terrific. And I thought that was really cool, you know, for Constantine to go where he was in the beginning of the book, which it's a trope for Constantine character, for the character of Constantine. To just be like, oh, I don't care. And then coming, you know, his conscience getting to him and his guilt getting to him. And then he finally comes in to actually, you know, save the day. That's usually what Constantine character does. But I really did enjoy how Taylor went about doing it.
Well, I think it's because of you actually got to see the circumstances in the book that would give him that motivation to do it. It's not like, oh, he's not there at all. And all this stuff is happening, and then he just shows up out of nowhere, and he's like, oh, I just decided to care. No, he's actually seeing these people getting ripped to shreds. He saw what happened to his friend. So I think it's just he's experiencing it a little bit more, where, you know, it makes a moment like that nice. But, I mean, seeing Constantine kind of being that guy to say, like, you know, the world's not over until I say it is, I kind of like that, because I was like, man, you get him. Like, you show him. Like, I really enjoyed that part of Constantine, and he was actually the one that I enjoyed reading the most, and I didn't think I was going to, because he can be really annoying sometimes. Well, most of the time. So, talking about annoying, this was a book that you mentioned on our chat that you read the first 3 pages and you gave up. I'm not sure if that was true, or maybe it was, but you ended up going back to it for the sake of the show. But did you finish Legion of Superheroes Millennium?
I did finish it in a very I don't care way. Oh. So I read the majority of it. I read as much as I could. And then when I realized what this book was about, I skipped basically the last story. Because that's what this book is. This book is... So when we got this in our folder, I'm like, okay, this is Legion of Superheroes. Well, guess what? This is not Legion of Superheroes. And then whoever's going to complain to Bendis, he's going to come at you with, well, technically this isn't number one, because this is it. I just realized that this is Legion of Superheroes Millennium. This isn't even the Legion of Superheroes title.
Yeah, no, this is not their
title. So that's what angered me. And how can you have the Legion of Superheroes as a title without putting a single Legion in your book whatsoever? This book angered me so much for so many reasons. And really, I'm gonna word vomit right now, so I'm gonna let it all out. So, the reason why I said in chat, oh, I'm three pages in and I just want to give up. This book is about Rose and Thorn, that annoying character in Action Comics right now. And you find out here that she has, for some reason, been able to survive thousands of years.
Well, literally a millennium, I guess, if that's what you're basing.
Yeah, yeah. And so
I actually thought, I don't know why, but I thought just based on the titles, I was like the previews, I was like, oh, wow, are they bringing back, like, Pandora?
See, that's what I thought also. Whenever I saw this character, I thought it was Pandora, but I also thought it was what's-her-name from the original Titans Rebirth character. I forgot her name. But do you know who I'm talking about? Were you reading Titans at all?
I was. I mean, especially at that first when it was good. I'm trying to remember.
I can't remember her name, but she was the like telepath in that team. Do you remember?
She was the one that kind of knew. Man, that she knew that Dick was kind of like hiding something, and she.
Yeah.
Damn it! What's her freaking name? All right, I know who you're talking about. I'm having a brain fart right now.
Okay. Yeah, so for some reason I thought it was like a descendant of her or something, and so I was like, okay, cool, they're going to play with Titans. You know, Legion of Superheroes is a team of adults to young adults, so that's fine, that's cool. And then when I learned that it's Rose and Thorn, I shut off my phone, I went to the Slack chat and vented. But I also vented because I see President Supergirl. The design looks cool. The idea is dumb.
Lilith.
Like
Lilith.
Yeah. Lilith, yes. Was the Titans character. Yeah. So
it took me a while, but I was able to find it.
I'm seeing like President Supergirl with Rose and Thorn, and all of a sudden it just dawns on me. Oh, wait. I forgot. Bendis doesn't know how to write stories, so he has to get old characters and just regurgitate random things. Just to annoy me. This is what he does. This is like, hey, I feel like Clayton's going to read this book, so let's do something that has nothing to do with anything. And that's what he wrote. And another thing that bothers me is Bendis previewed the next pages that were drawn by Jim Lee. You see all of the Suicide Squad, and then randomly see Rose and Thorn and Naomi in the back. And Bendis was all like, oh, I didn't tell him to draw Naomi. He just decided to do that himself. I'm like, no, that's not what artists do. They read the script and they say, oh, this is what needs to be in the book, so I'll draw it. Bendis is too full of himself with a character like Naomi to just say, oh, you know, for Jim Lee to be like, oh, do you want me to put your character in here too? I'm sorry, that just really annoyed me. Bendis.
The seeing the Naomi presence, it felt very forced. For one, I don't understand the point of this book, but it makes me more curious to see what's Rose's role in the Action Comics run. For example, I was not upset by the fact that it ended up being her, because I had no idea. So it didn't bother me. So to me, since I'm still, you have given up on the Leviathan and the Bendis Superman stuff. See, I'm still there. It's not my favorite. It's not even the first three or four DC books that I read. Because it's not, but I'm still enjoying the story. So because I am still there and I'm still invested, I'm like, oh, okay, well, here's a connection. The Naomi one bothers me because that felt super forced. And that's just you trying to, you know, I just feel like you're just going to be forcing her and putting her in situations. I understand seeing her at the end of, I'm drawing a blank. At the end of, was it Superman?
Action. It was action.
Okay, that one, okay, I can kind of see. This one here, I just feel like you're just throwing her in because I don't, is Rosenthorne another creation of Bendis? Or is Rosenthorne an actual?
So, Rosenthorne was it?
I don't feel like I've ever read anything.
I haven't read anything with her either, but Jim from Weird Science was actually talking on his podcast saying that this was a prior creation that Bendis has done a little bit of a spin on with this character.
Okay, so it's just somebody that's been underutilized and that gave him creative freedom to kind of go ahead and make her into something because no one's really going to care what they do with the character. Got it.
Yes.
So, I don't know. I find Rose interesting because she's so mysterious. I mean, you've only seen her in little spurts, kind of like in... I understand that since you like stories to flow, it seems that every time her appearance comes, it's kind of disrupting whatever Bendis is trying to do with a main story, so I can kind of see her appearance being annoying. But this, it got me, I don't know, it got me more intrigued. I don't know
this
why.
This got me annoyed because, you know, just like how you said, oh, you know, this makes me feel more interested in how she's going to be in action. This gets me annoyed because it tells me, oh, she's not going to leave action.
Got it. Like, when I saw her as powerful.
The exact opposite.
Gotcha. So when I saw her powers here, I was like, huh. I'm really curious, like, did anything that happened recently with the Red Cloud? Because I don't know why, I'm still, like, caught up on that. Like, did the Red Cloud actually do something? Because I've never seen, I mean, I know Thorn is kind of, like, powerful, or kind of, like, the crazy one, but I never would have thought that she's, like, Wonder Woman-esque. You know, Donna Troy-esque.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we'll see what ends up happening here. Now, I don't know why, I just find the threat interesting, kind of. But I don't know. I don't know if it was a little bit maybe of like the Jim Lee art that also kind of felt like, oh, you know, this is kind of nice. It's nice to look at. And sometimes when something in the story is not going so well, sometimes nice art, like pretty art, can kind of alleviate that.
Don't get me wrong. The actual pages of Jim Lee, like even up where he is fighting, because I'm pretty sure when she's fighting Superman, that's Jim Lee.
No, yeah, that's 100% Jim Lee.
So I enjoyed that. That looked really awesome. It's just the story overall.
Yeah. I mean, there's...
Because...
I mean, we'll need context because there is no point to the story.
Because here's another thing. That suit she's wearing hasn't even been introduced in action yet.
Well, that's what I mean. That's why I'm curious to see what's going to happen. But so you're going to end up seeing a lot more of Rosenthorne, it seems. So
unfortunately,
yeah, it sucks for you. Now the like the other story between like Rose, I guess, kind of like the flashing back, and now I'm assuming that's Terry McGinnis.
Yeah,
and her, and it looks like she was in the conquest of actually trying to find like the real Batman. Nope.
Yeah.
That was not. I got to be honest. I did not really understand, and it could just be my lack of knowledge towards the Commandy stuff. Like I like Commandy,
I hated that story.
I don't really know what's going on.
I hated that story not because like because I don't know anything about Commandy either, but just this small comment of, oh, this suit doesn't give you any powers. She has been with Superman. She knows who Superman is. She has made contact with Superman. She has worked with Superman. And apparently she has fought against Superman. And now she thinks that the suit gives him powers? Like, what?
Yeah, I don't...
And if you have been alive for this long... Because, let's remember, Commandy is one of the last humans on Earth at that point when he, you know, is on Earth. That's why he's called the last boy on Earth, mm-hmm. or whatever. Like, for her to, you know, survive that long, because at this point, this is way in the future.
Yeah, and, like, the Hall of Justice is destroyed.
Exactly. Yeah. And so, now she, like the stories are very convoluted and they're very just like out there, and it doesn't make any sense to me. Like, none of this makes any sense. This last story was the one that I completely skipped, because I will say I did not enjoy the art. I saw so many freaking word bubbles that I was like, oh, this is going to be completely pointless. And it just ended with Rose and Thorn running away from people. That, like, I was just like, okay, so I didn't miss anything.
I mean, yeah, so, it didn't really seem like much. I don't know. Like, it didn't. I thought the her being in such dire circumstances and just having, like, this smug. It seems like when you're at an airport and you're trying to complain that your flight's been delayed and you're speaking with the person behind the desk and they just don't care. They're acting as if they care. So I actually kind of found it humorous. Any reasons for it? No. But I don't know. This was a whatever comic in a way. It just kind of shows, in a way, where Rose has been traveling since then. So it's giving you an idea of her stories from the millennium, from the story that she's talking to President Supergirl to where it is now. So you're seeing all the kind of stuff. I'm like, okay. You know, and one, she's... I mean, I will say with the Commandy, I loved seeing one of the nuclear people, which is Ben Boxer. I thought that was a really cool nod. I like that. I'm like, okay. I mean, one is, you know, they... Commandy in here, like where he's at, which used to be kind of like where the Hall of Justice was here, it looks like they have the remains of the Superman suit. Okay, so she ends up taking it. Alright, okay, but what was the point of it? Was it just to show that she was there with Commandy at some point? Like, it just, I don't know, it just seemed like it was forced to just kind of show you where she's been and where she's traveled to get to this point, and I can understand going through all this crap why she would be as, you know, startled as she is right now, because she's out of her medicine. And if she doesn't have the medicine because there aren't people like her anymore, I get it. But I don't care.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you. That, like, oh my gosh. But this was a wasted issue, because I don't know if it actually shows, but does it? Are you looking at it right now?
I am looking at it right now.
On the cover page, does it show how much it's going to be?
It doesn't, but I'm sure. I mean, I haven't gone to my store today, but I mean, I can. I'm sure this book is going to be like $6.
It is. If it's any more than $2.99, it is a waste of paper.
Let's see here.
It's a huge waste of paper. Rose and Thorn's story, unfortunately, because anybody, any villain, any hero has the potential to have a really good story, but Bendis.
No, it's $5. It's $5. It's $4.99.
See, no,
and they're doing that because this has about 8 extra pages,
and the only reason why it has 8 extra pages is because of that stupid title. Millennium. That's what they're selling this on. And of course, the Legion of Superheroes title. They're going to use that to sell these books. And it's like, people are going to read this and they're going to get angry because they're expecting to see the Legion and not a single Legion character is in there.
Yeah, well, at least in part one. And I think that, I mean, they played it really smart because, I mean, you have the gorgeous cover that kind of gives you that Legion ring. Gorgeous. I'm still kind of confused on who that person is, because that doesn't look like Rose, but it might be. Secondly,
a lot of people have said that it might be Supergirl or Saturn Girl.
That makes no sense with the context of the book, but a lot of these covers don't have context with the book, so.
Which is why I call BS on them delaying Superman last week, or the, like, 3 weeks ago, because, you know, they changed the cover, which we talked about last week.
But it was mainly it was Lightning Lad. I think Lightning Lad, that was a huge. And some of the dialogue.
And here's also a good play, quote unquote, on DC is because last week we see the introduction to the Legion.
Yeah.
And then this book comes out, everybody's going to be like, oh, we get the very next issue in this book, and we're going to learn more about the Legion. We're going to learn more about how John is going into the Legion. And people just wasted $6 on nothing, or $5 on nothing.
Yeah, I hear you.
So,
yeah, I mean, like it's a whatever book. But one thing I think that they played really well was the fact that they used the way that like Bendis ended up teasing it, which was he used like OMAC. He showed OMAC as like a teaser, like that really cool splash page, which clearly we know now is probably going to be book two. He showed Commandy with like that Andrea Sorrentino art. You're like, oh. So they just played things really well. Now, again, I don't read interviews, so maybe this was told to us. But for those who don't, and if you're trying to guess, you know, grasp, well, I guess if you grasp new readers, they're not going to know who the heck Legion of Superheroes are anyways. Yeah, so I, who knows? I don't really know what they're going to be, what they're going to be doing with that. But it was, I don't care that I read it, but I'm happy that with review copies, I've read it to where I don't have to buy it. Because I still buy a lot of the books that I've already read because I love supporting DC, but it gives me also the flexibility of not buying something that I know that I don't even care if it's in my collection or not. And this will be one of those. The only thing that kind of gets me is that I love the cover. Like, I absolutely love this cover by, I'm guessing it's Jim Lee's cover. Yeah. Like, I think it's gorgeous that it's, it plays really well with the whole Legion ring. It just looks beautiful.
Yeah.
But, whatever. Let's get into something that I think will make us happy.
I will say, with this next book, I told you so.
Now you got me thinking. I don't even know. What did you tell me? You tell me a lot of things, Clay, and it's usually negative.
Last week we talked about that. That was the really cool thing about this week, was that we got to see the reveal of something that we were questioning last week with Justice League. Justice League 30 came out last week. Justice League 31 came out this week. I thought that was really cool that they brought it back to back.
Oh, is that what you told me?
Well, I said, because you thought that person or that thing that disrupted the portals was part of the totality. That's what you told me.
No, not totality. I thought it was a remnant of Jaro.
Well, okay, yeah. Sorry. Yeah, you saw that it was a remnant, or you thought it was a remnant of Jaro, and I said, no, I think it's like an actual somebody, and we'll get the reveal of it sometime next issue, which is exactly what happened in the last pages of this. It makes zero sense to me, but it was revealed. And I'm interested, but I'm very confused. I will say that. So let's jump to the very beginning of this book. It's basically exactly where we had left off. The very beginning is with Perpetua and with Lex, and they're talking about going to the... Where are they going? They're going to...
My computer all froze up, so I don't have the book like on me right now.
Okay, but they're reaching like some sort of like they're going far into space to find.
Well, they're going to like the end of the universe kind of thing.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. But we jump right into Stuart and Barry meeting the Justice Society.
I was going to virtually slap you if you forgot who they were. I mean, it's been a while.
Yeah. But let me just say, I love Jimenez is back on this book.
Ugh.
Absolutely love it. Absolutely love his art. The way he draws Wildcat, amazing. Absolutely love it. So they're questioning, like, who is who, and why do they look the same, and why haven't they ever heard of this Justice Society? And what I'll do is I'll talk about one story and then I'll go back to talk about the other. Because there's a total of like three stories going on here. Yeah. But with Stuart and Barry and the society, you know, they're basically all getting, you know, associated with each other. And it's really funny because, you know, Barry's like, oh, well, I'm the Flash and he's Green Lantern. And then that's when Jake Garrick was like, son, I think you got it all wrong because I'm the Flash and he's Green Lantern.
Well, I actually love before that when he's when Barry's like, well, who are you guys? He's like, no. You guys are in our headquarters.
Yeah.
Because it felt very, especially with them being from, I mean, I'm hoping, that, you know, like from like the 40s. I love that it's kind of like by like that stern, you know, grandpa type that you have. Like, no, son.
Yeah.
I ask the questions. But you listen. So I don't know. I found that
endearing. You're in my house. You're going to answer my questions.
Yeah. Eat your grandma's stew.
So I really love the back and forth. I love the roll call. I found it a little weird how like energetic Jay Garrick is and like how he like did the bow and everything. I found that to be a little weird. But you know, then Flash or Barry, strikes a little bit of a chord with Hawkman, when he mentions, Shayera. Yeah. And so, you know, he gets kind of angry at that. And then I feel like this is where Barry's mouth kind of gets him in trouble. Cause he's just like kind of word vomiting. He's just like, oh, you know, this is this and this. Cause he's so used to the time travel stuff. And so he's just like, hey, this is how it goes. And, you know, he's even talking to the Atom and he's like, oh, yeah, can you like shrink to like this small and blah, blah, blah. And he's like, well, I got a freaking fist that is going to, you know, shut your yap.
Yeah.
The old school banter, I will say, is awesome in this.
Or Jay asking Barry if they have flying cars. And he's like, no, but I have a hybrid. Like, it was good. Like, I thought the comedy in here was done very well. I will say that my favorite splash page is actually the one that highlights Jon Stewart. When they were kind of like, so what are we going to do? He's like, then we can go home. And it looks like this is going to be the first Justice League / Justice Society team up.
Yeah,
I don't know why, but I think that I love that Jon Stewart. Man, because Jon Stewart, man, he's... Dude, the man is meant to be a leader. So I love that he's the one in, even though this has been the reveal of the Justice Society in this comic, and, you know, especially with a Justice League, Justice Society team up, you would think that it would have a little bit more of like a co-team cover, like splash page. But I love that it shows Jon Stewart like being the one in the front, because, I mean, he would be ideally the one that would be the most qualified, I guess you could say, to be like that leader. So I kind of like that. The commandy stuff, I'm still trying to figure out exactly.
Yeah, and I have a small pet peeve about that story. But we see Dr. Fate opening up this portal into the past. Or, well, it's their present, but, you know, it's just saying the past to still show you that John and Barry are with them in the past. And they start to hear a call from Starman in the present about how they need to hurry because, you know, the time is running out. And they can hear the small remnants of that message in the past. And I thought that was really cool. And it also plays into the future with the Trinity.
Yes.
But they go onto this island, and this is where, like, I had an oh-crap moment when I saw the sign.
Oh, of Pearl Harbor?
Yeah, when you see the sign of Pearl Harbor, and they're like, oh, what date is it? And he's like, oh, it's December 7th, 1941. And I was like, oh, snap. They're in the, like, this is what should be World War II.
Yeah.
And Pearl Harbor is there.
Mm-hmm.
Not destroyed. Quite possibly going to be destroyed randomly because nobody's expecting it.
Yep.
So that was a cool reveal. But let's jump back to the Trinity story. They're going off into the future. They went into that portal. And they have already met Commandy and his friend soldiers or whatever. And they are basically asking, like, you know, what's going on? How did this happen? You know, just anything, of course, you would want to find out about a basically destroyed future. And just like how we were talking about in the Legion book, you know, this is the Hall of Justice. It's all destroyed. Not a whole lot of people go there because, you know, there's just, like, weird stories about it. And they get attacked by Brainiac bots. And you find out that Brainiac is kind of the one that has...
He's been kind of like the puppet master.
Yeah, he's the puppet master here. And you learn, oh, well, this is technically the Brainiac from the present, that he's kind of manipulating stuff in the future to where it all works out according to plan of Lex Luthor. Mm-hmm. And there's some awesome splash pages. I know Jimenez was teasing this art without any of the bubbles with Wonder Woman and Superman. Yep. But right here, this is where I think Snyder messed up as a Batman writer. Batman chuckles and says, huh, just trust me, kid. It would be a lot cooler if I were doing it. Batman doesn't gloat, or at least I don't think, I've never seen Batman gloat. So, like, that felt kind of off. But that's the only pet peeve I have in this book, to be completely honest.
I think usually you tend to see a little bit more of a looser Batman at times in a Justice League book. Because even though, yes, it's the Justice League, I think sometimes they try to make things a little bit more lighthearted than normal. Now, you don't get that in every, but I have noticed, not only here, but, you know, in all my times reading comics, that you do tend to get a little bit more of a, not a jokey, but he'll say a little bit more of a quip.
So, I think more so because I feel like a lot of Snyder's influence for this book is the Justice League animated series.
Yeah.
And so, I could definitely see Justice League animated Batman saying this. Of course, I wouldn't be one to say, oh, this would be in the Batman animated series, but it would definitely be in the Justice League animated series. So, I can understand that. And so, right here is where he says, Superman says, but the piece we're looking for is not on this world. I can feel it. It's on one of the other bottles. We need to beat Brainiac to it. And so, I don't know if you noticed this, there is an awesome cameo in this page with Brainiac.
Oh, that splash page, I gotta say, Jimenez probably draws one of the greatest looking... Because till this day, my favorite looking one was actually Brainiac from Gary Frank in the Action Comics.
Okay.
That was my favorite looking Brainiac. But this one here, there's something... When you see the one Gary Frank does, there's something like stoic about him. That it's he looks mm-hmm. very calculated. This one here, yeah. Because of that smile, he's like devious. You're like, ooh,
he's menacing.
Yes, he's very like, yeah. Oh damn, like what do you have up your sleeve? Like he looks more dangerous here. But yeah, I loved it, and I guess with you, because you're more of an anime fan, I don't know. Does he kind of look like Cell? It's Cell, right? Is that the green dude?
Yeah, he's the green guy. But I will say his suit in this splash page makes him look like the old school Smallville cyborg.
I can see that.
Because I just realized the thing around his neck is actually a hoodie. But if you look on the right side of that page, we see a bottled, like, Power Girl. That is Power
yep.
Girl.
Yep, 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 yep.
I saw her, and I was like, is he going to do it? Are they going to bring them back? I want them to bring them back. I want Earth 2. I really want Earth 2.
I need Earth 2.
I want Earth 2 back so bad. I really want it back.
And I think, I honestly, right now, with how DC is being run, if it's not Johns, Snyder would be the one that I would want to bring them back, because I don't know another writer that reveres history as much as he does.
Yeah.
So I would say that if he's the one to do it, kind of like reintroducing the Justice Society, he would be the one that I would want to do it. So I would actually, yeah. I'm really excited to see what's going on here. And dude, I gotta say that with what you were mentioning in regards to the ones, you know, the beautiful reveal that we got here at the end of this book, what do you think of the Justice Legion showing up in this book?
Oh, that was... I was not expecting
no,
that.
No, not at all.
So, of course, we get, you know, the Trinity and Commandy going into this ship that is a reference to the very first arc of this entire book of when Batman went inside of Superman. And, you know, Batman's like, oh, we don't talk about that. But, you know, they use that exact same ship to get into even a further future where we see the Justice Legion. And it's a legion that is controlled by... It's a Justice League that is controlled by Brainiac.
Mm-hmm. That's terrifying. That's terrifying.
It is absolutely terrifying.
And I gotta say, on that same splash of that little reveal, Perpetua scares the hell out of me.
Dude, we said this before in last issue. We'll say it again in this issue. Jimenez and his design for Perpetua is the embodiment of fear. It actually reminds me of Pennywise because I just watched the movie and it's still terrifying me now.
But it's like seeing her look and then just seeing like that little smug smile on Lex. It's actually like, man, these guys, what a freaking plan, you know?
Like, it makes me want to question if Snyder really just wants the bad guys to win.
Like, I mean, they should win every once in a while. I mean, you know, give them a win.
But what it like, genuinely, do you think if Snyder went to DC and said, hey, we've had all this hope and all of this, like, wanting a brighter future, what if we give them the opposite for a full year? A full year of absolute despair,
well,
darkness,
I would,
death.
I would say that most fans would already feel that with, like, Heroes in Crisis and kind of, like,
oh,
where...
Well,
yeah.
For sure. But I'm saying, like, why... Like, if this book, The Justice League, is supposed to be as big as it is, because it's all of the main characters of DC, basically... If Snyder said, hey, I legitimately want our heroes to lose, and I want DC to be run by villains for the next year, year and a half, and there to be a big triumphant return of heroes in a future Snyder crisis, like, that would be amazing and terrifying all at the same time.
I agree wholeheartedly. For sure. I would like that. I personally would like to see that. To see them actually see the villains and have it have like a kind of a lasting effect. But again, this is where things get a little complicated, and it actually has to do with our next book, which is Doomsday Clock 11.
Well, we didn't talk about the reveal though in Justice League.
Oh my gosh, you're right, Oh my gosh, I apologize.
So, at the very end of the universe, the former location of the Source Wall, we see this giant crack, which I'm assuming is the other side that everybody is fearful of. We see the anti-monitor talking to somebody, and it's that hooded person that we saw in last issue. They take it off. And lo and behold, the person who is working with the anti-monitor right now...
Aquaman. Oh.
I was like, oh, like, as soon as I saw it, I was like, oh, I told Mark they were going to reveal it. And then I stopped and I said, why Aquaman?
Dude, I need to read Drowned Earth again. I know that there's something in Drowned Earth that I am missing that...
I am missing something in Drowned Earth. I am missing something in the Aquaman title, and I am missing something
I'm not even, again, when it comes to Snyder, I go by Snyder continuity, which is his work. Because if that's the case, that's like trying to figure out how the heck is, you know, Scott Snyder's like Batman gets absolutely ripped to shreds and he's in body bag pieces, but then you see everything that's going on in Tom King's Batman. Or the garbage that we've been reading recently in, like, Detective Comics. So I go, when I go Snyder, I only think of what Snyder has written because I feel like that's his continuity. Same thing with Tom King. Tom is in his own continuity. So I feel that Drowned Earth, with what it is, that either from when he was speaking with Poseidon, like, were there some kind of, like, subliminal messages with Poseidon? Is there going to be something where when he made that sacrifice, when he said goodbye to Mera, was there something when he was, like, going into, like, the light? Is there going to be, like, maybe a vision that was witnessed? I don't know, but I am pumped to figure out what this is.
Oh, yeah. This is so cool. I really enjoyed it. Like I said, I'm confused about the situation, but I'm excited to see how Aquaman is so important to the Anti-Monitor and how the Justice League is going to react, or even how Mera is going to react when she sees Aquaman.
Now, one thing I will say, the one little nitpick that I have with George Jimenez, and I know that it's impossible to say that with George, is Aquaman's ears, that looks weird.
He has like elf ears, right?
He has like elf ears, but it looks like even with the inker, like the black for the border is way too thick. It looks really weird. That I'm like, but
like if you try to stare at just at his face, you can still see the outline of the ears.
Yes. So I will say that. But one thing that I love about what's happened with like Drowned Earth and stuff is that I am so for this long hair, bearded, like back to like 90s looking Aquaman. I think this looks so much better than, I mean, I don't want him to go back to the hook hand, but I love this. And I love this look. I love the reveal. But, okay. Now, this is a book that I don't really want to get too into spoilery context, just because I know the ramifications of this book and how big it is. So I don't want to be the ones to kind of like break down this specific book, because I know this is the book that most people, if they say or if they don't, is the one that they care about the most. Yes. Which is Doomsday Clock 11. Now let's try to see how good we can do here in terms of our vagueness, because we're not really great at that. Which is, first, do you still see Doomsday Clock having
large ramifications for the DC universe
after reading this issue?
I want to say yes. I really do. But I can't confidently say yes without seeing and knowing what we know about everybody else's stance and the position that Johns is in right now.
Okay, that's fair.
I want it to so bad with how this book ends, with what's going on. Like, just, cause here's the thing. I read this book first. This was the very first book that I read.
Dude, I read this book before even sending it to you guys because I wanted to make sure I did not get notifications between you and Kevin and just start bashing my freaking spoiler notification, where I'm like, you know what? I'm going to actually read this book first before I get the entire Comic Book Legion chat talking about the book and then they spoil it for me.
But see, that was the thing. Okay, so Juice, when we got the books while we were at work, me and Juice, and he looks at me, he's like, do you think Mark reads the books before he sends them to us? And I was like, I bet you anything he read it before he sent it. And then right when I said that, I got the Slack chat that said, oh, books are in the drive. By the way, Doomsday Clock was, and then you said the flames. And I was like, there you go. He read it beforehand.
Now, and yes. Now, I will say, I don't ever read them because you usually talk to me about what books we want to read. And I haven't read the books yet. It's just, I know that I am very anti-spoiler. But if somebody's complaining about, if you're complaining about a Bendis book, like Millennium, I'm not going to care. Because that book doesn't mean as much to me as what Doomsday Clock means to me. So I wanted to make sure for me that I read this book before, and it also didn't help that I couldn't open it on my freaking drive. So I wanted to make sure, yes, that I read this first. And you know what? I have zero regrets.
And I will say this. I actually waited because Juice, he was hoping Batman was going to be this week. And it actually got pushed so it could, you know, line up with it being it ending at the end of the year. So he read Deceased first. And I was like, okay, well, I'm going to wait. I'm going to wait until I get home because I want to read it on my tablet. I want to read Doomsday Clock on my tablet. And then I got here. I got to my computer. I was trying to find my tablet. And I was like, oh, you know what? It's going to be even prettier on this screen here. And so I actually read it on my computer. I maximized the window.
So you read it like IMAX. It was IMAX digital reading.
Yes. And it was glorious. Let me just say, I am still mad that this book is delayed and delayed and delayed and delayed and delayed.
I don't even care. Honestly.
I still get upset. I'm not going to deny that. And just be on a bandwagon and be like, oh, this is so amazing. This is amazing. But I'm still pissed off that it gets
delayed. When I see the delay, I'm just like, oh, man. It's a bummer because obviously you would have wanted to know what this is, like, already.
Yeah.
But I don't.
But I will say, in the moment of reading this.
You forget it.
I forgot that it was delayed. Because I was just in this moment. I was reading this book. It was great. It was like my heart was just pounding this entire time. And there's one thing that upsets me about this book. I'm not going to say it because we're not going to get into spoilers.
But it involves Lex, correct?
No, it involves.
Oh, because I thought you were actually bothered by the Lex. The Lex Little.
Oh, well, I was bothered by that small part, and I think I said that in the chat.
Yeah, that's what I figured it was about Lex.
But there is a page where you see Ozymandias and his two prisoners.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happens to one of the prisoners.
Okay.
That's what bothers me. But, and the reason why is, okay, if that's... is what is happening. Was that something that Johns was originally wanting to do?
Well, it looks like it coincides more with what Bendis is doing. And for that, boo. If that's the case. Like a major boo. But overall, this entire comic, I would say, were you pleased with it, though?
I was
knowing
pleased.
Knowing that this is an issue 11, I don't know how to say that last word, the penultimate, whatever.
Penultimate?
Yeah, shut up, show off. Well, yeah, whatever that word is, that you're pretty much knowing this is the last book before everything ends, and this was pretty much it, very well done, like the perfect recap of pretty much what Doomsday Clock is. In a way, like the eyes of Ozymandias, but then it's also in a way a nice flashback to the beginning of where Rebirth started, and how Wally kind of like plays the part. There is probably, I would say, Clay, what is your favorite moment about DC Universe, DC Rebirth Universe number one?
My favorite moment?
Your favorite moment. Was it the moment that was revealed in this book? That Lex witnessed.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. So there are many great moments. I thought it was really clever the way that Lex was able to figure out, because last time we saw Lex and Lois, I believe it was the issue where Superman kind of became like the enemy of pretty much the world with that, that story between Superman and Firestorm in Russia. Like, that was really big. That was a huge... So you had, like, two explosive comics. The Superman in Russia, and then you had the story of pretty much the, how Dr. Manhattan has pretty much messed with Superman's entire life.
Yeah.
So then you get this issue, and yes, I love the way how we've been able to figure out how Manhattan has been manipulating the Earth and the timeline. And you get that from Lex. Then you get how this story and this entire event has pretty much, in a way, has had two different themes, and how one part has gone to another, and you get that from Ozymandias. I thought that was beautifully told. It's just that the bummer that it happened on issue 11 of 12. Even though the last couple of pages, especially with the countdown, I won't say what the last couple of pages are, but when it's like, we will meet in 3-2-1 kind of thing, that was, yo, that was awesome.
Okay, so right before that, and I will get into...
This is really hard not to talk about Feature, but I want to respect this book.
I was going to say, I'm going to get into very vague spoilers right here. When you see Superman with all those other characters...
Okay.
You know which part I'm talking about.
I believe, just keep going and then I'll...
When I saw him... when we see him the very next time, at the beginning of that countdown,
okay,
I thought he was going to die. Like, I had a genuine fear that, like, and don't get me wrong, at the beginning of this entire book...
Oh, you're talking about when with all the characters, like, at the helicopter. Okay, yes. No, I thought you were actually talking about before you see him in the moment that you're talking about, and you see, like, Marinette and Mime in them. Which is also, nitpick, that it seems like their entire story means nothing.
Yeah, I feel like they are being pushed to the wayside.
So I don't know if that's because of the delays. I mean, unless we see something, but, dude, where's the comedian? Marinette, Mime, like, where has there's, like, the whole, like, the Joker, when he had all the villains on the bottom, underground?
Yeah.
There's...
That just... We didn't get any, resolution.
So what I'm hoping for is that Doomsday Clock becomes a... kind of like that Rebirth special, where it's, like, 80 pages. Because there is a lot that is being left. And if those don't get answered, because I know, based on John's work, that he doesn't really leave loose ends, I will say that this book was heavily, heavily fixed. Like,
messed with. Yeah.
And not because he wanted to. Which would just piss me off.
But I knew that, like, because I think it was issue, like, 3 or 4, when we finally saw the reveal of Manhattan, he revealed to the audience, readers, that he was going to meet Superman.
Yeah.
And so eventually I knew that sometime Superman was going to meet Manhattan. But at that moment of just seeing Superman go through, you know, debris and all this, and you see the hurt on his face because he's fighting somebody he is, like, weak against, like, technically speaking. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, oh god, is John's gonna kill Superman in this thing? Like, it genuinely, like, I was scared for just a split second, and then I saw the countdown and I was like, oh,
actually,
snap.
Based on how these things are all being done by, you know, like, this is taking place in the future. Two years, correct?
Yes.
2 years in the future. What makes me think about this is with the report that I posted on our chat about what's supposedly happening to a certain character in 2021. It makes me wonder if the fear that you had towards Superman would actually be towards another character. And,
well, I will say, if people want to know my thoughts on that, go visit Batman News Weekly on Anchor with Juice Wayne. Me and him talked about it last night. He's going to be editing that and posting it sometime by Thursday or Friday. So,
bro, that was a beautiful plug. But I think that's the best we can do with Doomsday without getting into a lot of the meat and the potatoes of it.
Well, I will ask this, because I didn't know, me or Juice did not know what this was. the very last panel. I don't know what that is.
Now, if I am... Okay, I'm gonna...
Because it says, and I will spoil the dialogue, it says, it is the world, it is time, and at the very last panel it says, it's time. I don't know what that is on that last panel.
Okay, so it's not exactly what I thought it was going to be. Because what I was thinking of at first, but it doesn't look like it's... I thought we were going to get a... In a sense, it kind of reminded me of a Superman Prime. But no. But it's not. So I'm kind of... I'm actually more curious of what that could potentially be.
Yeah, because I thought that it was a part of Ozymandias's costume, but I don't think it is.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't look like it. But we'll. I mean, only time will tell. 2 months, maybe. Because honestly, I don't know what their ideas are for when this book is coming out. If they're going to try to delay this until the end of the year to coincide with them going into monthly starting in January. I mean, mm-hmm. I feel like that only makes sense to do it then, honestly. Because it's going to feel really weird if this book is supposed to have any kind of ramifications. And, but then it's, I don't know. Well, I mean, no, Leviathan has been monthly, so that will be done by then. Yeah, so I don't know. I'm still just trying to see if this actually does play a part with everything. But we'll see, because we do know that there has been a lot of changes with creatives on books. And it's a lot of announcements have been made that certain writers are leaving books. And, I mean, there's been, like, rumors. I don't know if it's been official of, like, Snyder leaving Justice League after 39. You got Wilson is leaving Wonder Woman.
That one is true.
Yeah, that one I know, because I know Steve Orlando's going back on that one. But I don't know if it's more permanent or not. We will have to see. But it does look like a lot of changes are happening, and it could be possible that the reason why they're happening is maybe because whatever this does, whatever ramifications this has, will lead into...
And I will say, if Doomsday Clock still has the big ramifications for the DC Universe... that it was promised at the beginning of Rebirth, and all of these changes are because of that, let me just say, Johns is a freaking boss. If he could still manipulate DC like this, and not saying manipulate as a bad thing, but I'm saying as much work as he has been having and how like heavy his workload is, to be able to still write a comic so good and so powerful... for DC to be like, all right, let's just wipe this slate clean real quick. All right, Johns, what do you want to do? And that's what it
like,
ends up happening.
I'm really hoping that after this, you know, I really hope that he's just like, because, I mean, you keep on getting the teases from Jason Fabok. Like, I feel like the three Joker things might not be that big of a, like, have the big ramifications that you had from, like, a Darkseid War. I mean, you're still going to get the story because I think people are still interested in it. But man, I really do hope that DC has realized what mistakes they've made by either removing him as chief creative officer to all the crap that they've been doing recently. Yeah. Even though I'm still enjoying it, it's not as fun as like when Rebirth and you knew what the vision was. I really do hope that they give him the reins back. Again, that would require him to kind of step away from his TV duties. And maybe now with this HBO Max and who knows where this DC Universe app is going. It looks like it's going to become like a Marvel Unlimited, like comic only kind of thing.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll see. But I miss him. I miss reading his books. I miss his influence.
For sure.
So, yeah.
But.
Yeah, we can't talk anymore about this book because then we're gonna review everything, and then this show's gonna be like 2 hours long. So,
I know, we're already with at a minute and 36. That being said. Or, I mean, an hour 36. Gosh.
Yep. Yes, we are. So, with that being said, you can find me at Mark Reads Comics. You can follow Comic Book Legion at CB_Legion. If you like fantasy football, follow us at FFL Pod. And Clay, where can they find you, buddy?
Well, if you're wanting to hear my plug again, since we already plugged each other at the very beginning of the episode, it's still at Fanboy Clay on Instagram and Twitter. Fanboy Comics Pod on Twitter as well. And we would like to have more contributors for the website. We want more reviews. So if you guys are interested in writing reviews, hit one of us up and we can make it happen.
Hit us up, man. That sounded like a threat, Clay.
Did it?
Yeah, it really did. He's like, we want it. We want it now.
I mean, I would enjoy
I don't know. Jeez, man. Shave your beard. Maybe it'll make you happier or something.
No.
No, you're...
Oh, I am going to... I told my wife, ever since I cut my hair for the Disney trip, that I'm actually going to grow it out. I'm actually going to donate my hair, so I have to grow it 10 inches.
Oh, nice. So, your hair... But you seem like the fro type.
Yeah, my hair does not grow down. It grows up, so it's going to...
So sooner or later, your hair is just going to block this entire, like, Google screen.
Nice. Yep, basically.
Cool. Well, then.
It's going to be awesome.
I'll take a picture so I can remember what you look like. All right, buddy. So with that being said, thank you guys so much for listening and supporting, and we will talk to you guys next week. See ya.
See ya.